CITR 101.9 FM. This is one of the online interviews. I'm joined by Josh Simmons. Last time I spoke with you, we kind of force it to have to be online only. And this one we don't necessarily have to be, but it is because I'm...
I can keep from talking dirty. That's okay.
No, we can talk dirty. That's okay.
Yeah. There's not too much filth in the Gibbler story anyway, I don't think.
There's a little... There's
some near the end, I guess.
There's some strokeage.
Comparatively, it's restrained. There's some strokeage, yes.
So,
but it's monster strokeage, so maybe that's more acceptable somehow, you know?
Just so people know what we're talking about, Josh is one of the folks in the new Kramer's Ergot mammoth tome, the Gutenberg of comics, mm-hmm. One might say. It's big, and your story, Gibblers, you said it's called?
Night of the Gibblers, yeah.
Night of the Gibblers.
Night of the Gibblers.
One of the longer pieces in the book, too, actually.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. Tons of tiny panels on three pages. I think it's about 330 panels in all.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a comic in itself.
Yeah, I mean, it was originally going to be a book of its own. I was going to do it after House, so it would have been about the same length as House, like another short book, like 60 to 80 pages, something like that. But, yeah, I just decided to cram it into those huge pages instead.
Well, I was wondering where the kind of the idea came from with it, because it's neat. Like, most of the stuff in the Kramer's book, it's interesting. Different people, some people do the story they would tell on that size page, you know, just more room to put panels. Other people would actually use the page and pull it out and, you know, really play around.
Yeah.
With your story, it's kind of interesting because I felt like with this space, from what I could tell, it seemed like you're slowing the story down, like the movements, and kind of utilizing that that excessive amount of panels. Not excessive, but maybe extreme. Ultimate extreme.
Some extra panelage there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's the normal sort of pacing I would do. The thing about the book is when Sammy told me about it and asked me to do it, I hadn't seen the Little Nemo book. And, like, I was on the phone with him, and he told me the size, and I kind of wasn't listening. And he was like, "Do you know how big that is?" And I was like, yeah, you know. But not until I sat down and kind of measured it out did I, you know, really kind of grasp it more. And I didn't actually see the Little Nemo book until I finished those pages, the Gibbler's pages. So the only thing I maybe regret a little is I wish I'd kind of done a little more with some kind of page design.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for the sake of, you know. So they should just do another one that size, and just so I can do that.
Because, you know, this one wasn't stressful enough.
No.
So what is...
It looked easy from over here. I didn't, you know, seem fine to me.
I just give them a story and print it up. Yeah, what, you know, what's the harm? What's the story about? Tell us about the Gibblers, the Night of the Gibblers.
It's about an old man living in a cabin in the woods by himself, and it's kind of about the first whole page kind of just shows what his life is like, and it shows him like walking down to the town, the little village, and and selling his wares, and then the Gibblers are these monsters which are descending on the town, on the village, and they come in and wreak some havoc on the old man and residents of the town, I guess. It's kind of like it's kind of classic, like, Evil Dead kind of horror story, like, you know, a cabin in the woods under siege by demon-type creatures. But there's this running dream sequence going through it, too, which is bizarre. It's got poop eating and...
Poop eating?
Some other stuff, I don't know. I mean, I finished the book, the story, like, 2 years ago, so I don't have it in front of me either, so... You'll have to remind me of things, maybe.
Well, it's, I don't know how much I'll be able to remind you of within the story. You have a bit of a love of the old horror stuff. What kind of movies do you think were influencing you for this one? Like you're saying, Night of the Living... I think, was it Night of the Living Dead you just said?
Well, Evil Dead.
Evil Dead, sorry.
The Cabin in the Woods basic premise, but it's not... I've actually been getting a little burnt out on horror movies lately, because after you see so many, you know, you kind of realize there's only a handful of really great ones or really interesting ones, because after a while it's kind of, they're just repeating these ideas or, you know, these kind of cheap jump scares kind of things. So it's like this story is kind of a monster story, the same way that House is kind of a haunted house story, but not really. It's a lot more personal, I think. So I don't know if there's any movies directly that influenced this one too much. It was more just kind of things I was living in a cabin in the woods when I kind of came up with the idea, and so it was things I was scribbling back then.
Now, this story and House and the other one, whose name has just jumped out of my head, the one that came up from Fantagraphics, was it?
Jessica Farm.
all three of them kind of all share a theme, I guess, of solitude.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good way of putting it?
Solitude, yeah. I mean, there's a... Well, I think House and Gibblers both have this kind of, like, doomy, apocalyptic tone and ending. I think Jessica Farm is, because it's still ongoing, it's a little more... It's got the kind of, you know, horrible violence, but it's also got more kind of happy parts in general. So, I mean, yeah, House and Gibblers are both kind of doomy and apocalyptic. And I think it's fitting for Kramer's, too, because the book overall seems kind of doomy and apocalyptic. I finally got to look at a bound copy yesterday. And, yeah, a lot of apocalypse going on there, I think.
There is. It's not a happy book.
No, not necessarily.
Now, you're going to be at the signing on Sunday down at the Family Store, right?
Yes, yes.
Yes, you and about 20 other people, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think so. I think all the local cartoonists are in the book.
Are you going to be doing any other stops on the tour, or are you just going to be...
No. I'm just working. I actually have a bunch of deadlines. I'm doing a story for Boogie Sleazy Slice, which I have to finish.
I was going to ask about that.
For the end of the year, so that's kind of the most pressing thing right now.
Now, the Sleazy Slice story you're doing, I understand it's a whole new step in filthiness for you.
I don't know, did Robin say that?
Just the stuff that you're mentioning about some of the... Not a whole new step, but it's not a... definitely not for kids.
No, well, I mean...
As per Sleazy Slice.
Definitely ain't for the kids. But if anything, it's more... It's a little more restrained. I think there's only one... let's see. One incest blowjob orgy scene. And it's near the beginning, and after that, it's all fairly tame in comparison. There's a lot of violence, I think, but there's not necessarily a lot of... It's not like the story in the first Sleazy Slice where, you know, a lot of, you know, horrible elf rape going on.
The neck rape.
I think in general it's a bit more restrained. Oh. I feel like Gibblers is, too. Some of my older stuff.
Are you... You find yourself kind of pulling back as you... get older?
Well, it's organic. I mean, I don't think it's not like I have to prove that, like,
mm-hmm.
know, that I can do the gnarliest shit all the time or something like that. It's just whatever I'm compelled to do.
Well,
I think, I mean, it's still kind of bleak psychologically a lot of the time, the stories.
Well, that's the one thing I felt, especially reading the Jessica Farm, is that you're telling a story that you're kind of forced to tell, like you have to get it out.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. I suppose there's sort of a compulsion to a lot of the stories. Jessica Farm, that's kind of an odd one, though, too, because it's also on this schedule where I have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... I don't necessarily feel compelled to do each page each month, but it's... I guess in a different kind of way, I'm forcing myself to do it then, yeah.
Like, I don't mean, forcing, like, oh, I have to do this out of some sense of obligation, but it's a story that you have in yourself that you need to tell.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I suppose all the stories are like that. I mean, any cartoonist worth his salt, I think, is kind of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Similar kind of thing.
So,
you know?
What other stuff do we have to look forward by you in the coming while? You got the Kramer story and the Sleazy Slice, number 3, available at cinemasewer.com.
Yeah.
And,
there's a story in the new Moam, which is coming out any day now, I think.
Oh, nice. I did not know you were going to be in Moam.
Yes. So I might kind of do short stories for that irregularly. There's Diamond 3, which is Jason, he owns the shop Floating World Comics in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
He started publishing comics, And so it'll be, I have a 2-page story in that anthology, which I think is out. And then in the new year, I'm going to start the ABBA book, the ABBA science fiction porno book.
Oh, fabulous.
Full blown. Yeah, getting full blown on that one. So, yeah, you know, keeping busy, lots of stuff coming up.
Now, are you going to, is the ABBA space porn, sci-fi porn, going to be self-published, or do you have someone lined up that's going to take it on?
No, I think, you know, I'm not interested in self-publishing, but, you know, probably Fantagraphics. Yeah, I like them.
And I think they like you. I think Groth has been on record for saying you're one of his favorite young cartoonists.
Oh, that tickles my nuts.
Yeah. Yay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to actually reading the Kramer story. It looks to be fabulous. As far as the putting it together, the coloring, I'm just curious about the coloring, because it seems when you look at it in the full page spread, it, like when you go back and just kind of look at it as a shape, it seems like kind of with the house story, is that you're kind of doing a movement with the colors as well as like with the house with the black and white, it was shifting.
Oh, yeah. There's, well, first of all, one thing I stole from House, I kind of ripped myself off, is I made the panels shrink. I mean, made the panels go from being kind of widescreen to being narrow.
Ah.
You know, they're all kind of the same size, and I did it really gradually, just like in House, where I don't necessarily want the reader to notice, but it kind of is maybe a, kind of a cheap formal trick to build tension. And then the dream sequence, I think, slowly shifts colors also in a way that I wanted it to be really subtle, where you don't really notice. And I think it goes from, like, purple to reddish to orange to yellow at the end. Yeah, so those are kind of the couple of the little formal things I did with it.
And I'm curious about the choice of colors, because they're very muted or kind of pastel-y.
Well, it's colored pencils, so it probably could have been darker, but I would have just worn my wrist to a stump, you know, coloring it in that way. So, yeah, I like the kind of pastel-y colors for this one. It's kind of fitting because it's like a rural. I mean, it's basically based on Vermont. I was living there when I came up with the story, so that's kind of really what the setting is.
Now,
pastoral, rural, yeah.
You're in LA now, and how is that kind of, because you're talking about how Vermont really affected, like, especially like this in house, how has kind of being in such a sprawling metropolis, if that's the way of putting it, a smoggy hell.
Yeah, I love it.
How is that affecting your story?
Well, I've had a little bit of the weird kind of, like, Hollywood, you know, there's a lot of people trying to get into Hollywood here and kind of weird, desperate characters.
Mm-hmm.
So that, and I also, like, go to the movies a lot. There's a lot of beautiful old movie theaters here, and I'm kind of staying in a old movie theater temporarily right now. So, you know, I'm just, like, balls deep in movie land, you know, and, I actually just did a 1-page strip for MoM. I don't know if it's going to be in the next one, but it's like a bunch of newspaper-style comic strips, you know, like Garfield kind of thing. But it's 4 on a page, and they're all, in one way or another, to do with movies or movie-making, even in maybe some kind of more abstract ways. So it's definitely seeping into the work that I do a bit. That's again, like you were saying, like the kind of compulsion aspect to it. Like, I'm not consciously saying I'm going to do comics about movie making. It's just these are the ones that it occurred to me to do, you know.
Well, there can be some interesting crossover, not in the in the Hollywood, like making Spider-Man movie comic crossover, but as far as like you look at some of the interesting storytelling techniques that, say, like Orson Welles would use, and kind of that work with crossover with comics, with being able to adjust and kind of use your visual medium, I guess, the way of putting
it. Sure, yeah.
So.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been doing storyboards, too, for work, so that's, you know, a whole nother level of thinking about movies versus comics and the similarities. There's a lot of similarities. I've definitely been influenced by movies as far as, like, how I do comics. I just rewatched Night of the Hunter recently, and I think I've taken a lot from that movie. I've seen it a bunch of times.
Working on storyboards, it could be kind of interesting as far as, like, paring down your style, too, wouldn't it? Because you don't do as full as you would, say, with a comic, where you're basically...
Yeah, I actually spend way too much time on the storyboard. I just finished storyboarding an entire movie, and I think you're only supposed to take about 15 minutes per page, like 3 panels per page.
Yeah.
And I've been taking like 45 minutes to an hour, but I mean, they're really happy with it. So the next job, I'm going to try to strip it down more, because you gotta, I mean, it's just maddening to do like a whole movie like that.
Mm-hmm. You gotta, you know, watch your time, I guess.
Yeah. You gotta have more time for the comics.
Exactly. The comics are the most important thing.
Yeah.
If they aren't, we'll cry. Well, thanks for joining me today, Josh.
Mm-hmm.
Those were my questions with the new Kramers. So I'm going to post this, I think, probably on the weekend, just maybe tomorrow night or tonight. No, tomorrow. I'm going to work all night. Just so you guys have a little promo that I could add for the signing on Sunday. Don't forget, if you can, send me your song requests.
Oh, okay. It's like a group interview, though, right? Don't you have a bunch of...
I'm posting them all up separately.
Oh, okay.
So, I've posted the interview I did with Anders. I think I posted that on Monday or Tuesday night. And then I've interviewed Matt Thurber, and I'll be posting that later. And then I'm talking to Ron Rigi and Frank Santoro and Sammy Harkham over the next couple weeks. And I think I'll end it off with Sammy's interview after I post all the other people's interviews as kind of the bookend.
Oh, yeah. Probably good.
If that makes
sense.
Cool,
man.
Yeah, so thanks for joining me, Josh.
Yeah, thank you, Robin.
That was Josh Simmons, and talking about his new thing for the Kramer's Ergot anthology, Kramer's Ergot 7. Check it out. Josh is pretty fabulous.
Marina walks her life asleep. She never looks above her feet. She never smiles, nor does she speak. When Joey died, Marie went mad. She'd given him what life